So just befriend the weak. And break another heart this Wrestling Indies International. I'm Pete. I'm with my buddy Tim. Tim, man, what's going on?
Oh, same old, same old. Seems like interesting stuff going on. Government shutdown ended, I guess, right? So we'll see if that changes anything with the New Japan stuff that everyone's going crazy about right
now. Yeah, I feel bad for people who buy tickets for that. It's.
Meanwhile, I'm on the website looking to buy tickets because I didn't realize... that the show was at the Globe on the 30th. So uh-huh. I'm like, oh, I wonder if seats are... Oh, everything's sold out. Oh, man. Okay, well, then I do... Oh, there's a few of the standing area left. Yeah, it's like half the price of PWG tickets for the same building PWG runs in, and the card's not... To me, the LA card's not terrible.
No, it's not. I looked at it, too. It's not terrible. Well, if you're going in expecting a New Japan show, it's terrible.
Right, right. I mean, that's interesting that it's at the Globe. I remembered when it was announced, but that's interesting to think that people thought that they were going to get a New Japan show at the Globe. I think a full New Japan show there would have been impossible, really, based on just the way the building is set up. So, yeah.
And then it seems like Ronda Rousey is going to close up at Mania.
Yeah, that's the news, right? Or kind of the rumor. I guess it's not even news. It's speculation as far as I can tell, or it's a possibility.
It sounds like, it sounds like she signed a 1-year deal.
From what I heard, I thought it was like...
Even though it, everyone thought it was speculated as like a multi-year deal, but I think maybe she did sign a multi-year deal, but... With her having the option of doing year two or three or what have you.
Right. And it seems like the way it's sounding, it sounds similar to the UFC contracts, or at least the way that they're treating it. And I mean, WWE has been doing this more and more with injuries and stuff that they're holding people to contracts, but it sounds like, I think this is what I heard. I don't know if this was true, but that it was a multi-year deal, but if she takes time off, it's like she'll be able to just come back, but they'll just extend her contract out. So she could take as much time off as she wants for something like that, I guess.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to be using her more like an Undertaker or a Shawn Michaels or, you know, one of those type of guys, The Rock, where, you know, she did her year, she wants to do her family. And if she gets the bug or they really need her for a promotion or a show, she'd be more than willing to come back if it doesn't, you know, obviously when she's not pregnant type thing.
Right. It sounds like in some ways it feels like Fox is left holding the bag here.
Yeah, because they're counting on her to be the SmackDown on SmackDown, right. I think.
Yeah, and that was one thing that I had kind of talked about when all this stuff was going on, at least here on the show.
Yeah.
You know, that like... That was the real measure. Like, it doesn't matter how Ronda does as a character, as a performer, as a draw. None of that mattered because she was the draw for that big contract, really. So any money that they paid her and anything that they got, they're already set on the returns on that just by getting that Fox deal. And now she's gone. I mean, yeah, it's great.
Yeah, I'm sure Fox isn't happy if that's what's going to end up happening. Rey Mysterio seems like he's defying Father Time. I don't know if you saw any of those matches he had with they were awesome. I liked the first one better than the second one. And it shows when you're over where you're able to do, you don't have to. I mean, yeah, they had a lot of high spots in their match. I don't want to take away from that, but you know, they were doing a lot of fun mat work, working a headlock, selling an arm injury. Showing you that you can just go out there and work, and if you're over, the crowd will stay with you on working a really smart match with with really cool high spots. We'll make stand, don't get me wrong. But it wasn't just bam, 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 bam. You know, it wasn't anything like a Young Bucks match. It was, I felt it more, it was like a, I thought it was like, felt like it was, just a really good match with, you know, good, had good psychology, had good high spots, mixed everything that you want in a wrestling match where if you're a fan of high spots, they give you enough of that. And that's the thing, they don't do so many of them where you don't forget, you don't remember them all. They did enough where you remembered them, and they built to them really well. And then if you're a fan of mat wrestling, you get to see that. If you're a fan of seeing a babyface sell, you get to see Mysterio, Andre. Cien Almas was had really good heat segments. It was a fantastic television. And I think I had Ray, I either had him second or third as my all-time greatest wrestler when I did that the poll a couple years ago, the Pro Wrestling Only, and it's just amazing to see the guy feel like he has like a shot. He's been rejuvenated almost. He didn't look bad when he was in Lucha Underground and stuff. He looked good. Don't get me wrong, but here it just feels like, you know, because now it's on WWE TV. Everyone, you know, all wrestling fans are seeing it now, and it's pretty cool, huh?
Yeah, yeah, and it's interesting because it's kind of like the last time he was kind of gone in between contracts and stuff like that, that he, like, picked up some stuff from the indies. It was like last time most of it, everything he got was, like, Amazing Red spots, but now it's like he picked up stuff from all over the place, and kind of talked about it when we reviewed his match with Ospreay on here. At the time, I talked about that, like, he had the ability to do a lot of the stuff that other people on the indies were doing, and there's something about Rey Mysterio that makes it work. Part of it is his overness, part of it is just his innate, like, ability to pull at your heartstrings, you know, with his emotions.
Yeah, because, you know, a lot of those high spot guys, they don't know how to sell, but fuck, Rey knows how to sell with a fucking mask on, for crying out loud.
Yeah, so he makes the most out of everything. He picks out the cool spots that really pop. Makes Andrade look like a million bucks, and just, yeah, I mean, turns back, like you said, kind of feels like turns back the clock, but in a lot of ways, he was doing all that stuff reaching around on the indie stuff, too. So, he's just showing off.
But on a bigger spotlight now.
Right, and it's interesting because it's like he's got the resurgence that people are seeing. He can still do all this. People are going crazy for his matches, and then you got Brian with the resurgence on the character. I mean, this,
yeah,
he's feeling like the best, you know, heel in wrestling, maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe number two, depending. If you've just recently watched, there's a Zack Sabre Jr. versus Pac match from RPW that's fucking... I mean, if Zack keeps this up, this level of heel that he works in this match, I mean, I think he's going to end up being, Wrestler of the Year again for me this year. But it's just so interesting to see Zack and Brian showing off their heel acumen when they're both guys that, you know...
You didn't have Zach this year, number one, did you?
No, I did not. But I can see him.
Yeah, because I thought you had him your last 2 years.
And Quentin then did.
2018, I thought he got bumped off.
Quentin had him the last 2 years. I had him last year, and the year before that, I had Trevor.
Okay, that's right. Okay.
Yeah, and so, but I think Zach could get it back, and it just, I mean, it goes into just how awesome he's doing. But yeah, Brian and Rey Mysterio showing off. Big time on SmackDown. WWE's looking pretty good on that side of things. One thing I thought about, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast or not, but seeing Andrade in there with Rey and the size that Andrade is, it reminded me of thinking back to when he was first starting out. I remember Dr. Lucha on like a Observer radio talking about how small Andrade was when he was La Sombra, and that it was too small to make it in America as a star. And then now, I mean, wrestling has shrunk so much that he doesn't look that small and out of place realistically. And so it's just kind of interesting to think about how much the landscape in wrestling has changed. You know?
Oh yeah, and he has a lot of Eddie Guerrero in him.
Yeah, for sure. And there's definitely some. There's a lot of wrestlers who I feel like have a lot of Eddie.
But even if you look at him in the WWE right now, I mean, he has a valet. Eddie started first when he started getting over, was a lot of it was because of his valet, and then eventually it became Eddie, and hopefully they'll become it'll be all about Cien Almas eventually, you know?
Right. And the thing is that Eddie, I mean, you know, there's the rumor, I don't know if you ever heard this story, but I swear I remember hearing this, that like Eddie was the one that Vince was the most excited about. And
yeah,
listening
I heard
to
that.
Pritchard podcast, you know, when the Radicals all got signed, Eddie was the one that stood out to him as the guy that was going to, he was going to make something up. And then with the Pritchard podcast, you hear him talk about, you know, his connection to Texas and Latin American wrestling and stuff like that. And, you know, Pritchard was a very close confidant of Vince for a long time, and Vince has always loved doing ethnic baby faces. So yeah. You think about it, and people always talk about like, oh, Vince is, you know, he's not going to push someone like Andrade. He's not going to push. But I mean, it's really not out of character for him, and it's not with his background to think that he would want to really push a Latino star. And then you think about Del Rio, and people talk about, why does he have this soft spot for Del Rio? It just shows like he really wants to have a big time Latin American star, and you can tell that he thinks of that, you know. So,
which is interesting. It's man, he uses it mostly on SmackDown. He's never really tried to develop it for the Raw brand, because I think he views Raw brand as more of a national product. Well, I might be completely wrong, but I feel like Vince treats SmackDown more like a territory where you can get an ethnic star, because I mean, SmackDown runs a lot of the ethnic Texas border towns,
yeah.
And Eddie, I mean, Eddie was a big figure back in the day. Ray was, and they've been trying to replace Ray, and I mean, they tried it with Del Rio, and it worked to a lesser extent. And I think they're hoping maybe Cien Almas is their future of that ethnic draw, Hispanic draw.
Yeah, and it's not, you know, it's not a terrible idea, and it makes sense, especially with them now being on Fox, and you think of Fox as being kind of a big network, but a lot of people who are watching major network television at this point are going to, you know, smaller markets, so running to smaller markets that have, you know, a Latino population, which is huge in America in general. And like I said, I mean, Vince has always clearly has always built his promotion on ethnic baby faces. People forget
from
that.
From Bruno to Pedro Morales to
even Jen. Brett. I mean, you could even think of Brett as an ethnic baby face in a way. Yeah. So it's just like he's always drawn to that. So it's just, it, you know, I think that the glaring thing is everyone thinks, you know, because he's never had a black champion, that means he's racist. And even, you know, even that's not an argument against being racist, but like that he will like not push an ethnic star. But I mean, he has a history of doing it. I mean, that's not to say you're not racist, because you can kind of look at it as exploiting it, exploiting like ethnicities in a way. But you know,
I mean, he did put Bobby Lashley in that big rub from WrestleMania with Trump,
exactly.
You know. So.
Yeah, so I think Vince just, he knows what's good for business, and will just work with whatever it is.
Right.
So it's just like, it's interesting to see, because the way everything's going, and with his back against the wall, it's like, where does he go now? We'll see, continuing moving forward. But it does feel like the pieces are coming together for what the SmackDown brand is going to be moving on to Fox.
Yeah, you know, and I don't know, you mentioned Trevor Lee earlier. Have you seen the like a little bit of backlash he's getting on Twitter?
No, I saw something about that. I saw a tweet that looked like it got deleted, but I saw like a screen cap of it that he tweeted out, like, subscribe at PewDiePie, who's that Canadian kind of alt-right character from Twitch streaming, I guess. That's the only thing I saw.
Well, there's some tweets from like 2012. So when he was like obviously a teenager still. With some racial, using the N-word and stuff.
Ooh.
Like that. It's not a good look, but you know, you also gotta put the timestamp on it. I'm not justifying what he's saying by any stretch of the imagination, but I think if you look at anybody, if you look yourself in the mirror, I think you could obviously say you would have handled things a lot differently when you're 17 or 18 or 19 than you would when you're 25 or 30. And it just feels like he's, you know, even they're holding this against him for something he said when he was clearly, you know, he was a Southern guy who, you know, he wasn't seasoned. He hadn't learned. He hadn't been, or maybe been around, culturally been experienced. And I think you learn from those type of things. And I don't know. I don't think you should hold something that is something he said as a teenager. And, you know, that's the thing is, like, a lot of people aren't mentioning the timestamps on the tweets. I mean, they were 7 years ago and stuff when he was clearly a young from North Carolina. I mean, I remember, I wouldn't want people to go back in my history and revisit. I've done plenty of dumb things I'm not proud of. Done a lot of dumb things. But you know what? Would I have handled my situation differently if I was older and more mature? Yeah. And I think that's that comes from age. And I'm sure he wishes he never put him out there. But, you know, I just don't think the guy should be crucifixed and hopefully not lose his job because of something he said when he was a teenager and just probably didn't understand at the time, or or a case of immaturity. I mean, and being grown up in the Southern culture, I mean, it's a little different. And I'm not, again, I'm not justifying what he said, but I think you got to, I think everyone should look at it in the context and stuff of the year of when he said it and how mature he was and how seasoned he was and as a person, you know?
Right. And I think the call-out culture and kind of trying to drag people through the mud for some, like, version of performative wokeness on social media is, like, it seemed like it was very popular and even bigger up until recently. I mean, anytime someone gets signed, someone has to troll through someone's social media and find what they can. And unfortunately, as social media is getting to the age where a lot of people had it for a long time, there's a lot of stupid stuff from the past like this for sure. But I feel like I get the impulse to want to, like, revel in someone else's being an idiot in the past. And I feel like it's honestly, it shows an immaturity that I think people who do it are going to regret it. Also, like, weirdly, I think, you know, I'm not saying, like, oh, don't ever, you know, have an issue with someone being racist. But the reason why I say that is I feel like something like this, I get why you would think it's bad, but there is so much, like, real racism and issues going on in the world that's contemporary that it feels like that's what we need to be focusing on. And I think that's why I say people who are really into dragging through someone's history to prove that they used to be racist are going to regret these tactics if things continue to go down the line they are, with kind of authoritarianism being really popular and there being a lot of, like, fascistic tendencies and just nationalistic, like, rhetoric getting pushed more and more to the front on the fringes. People are going to, like, kind of regret that they spent so much time focusing on someone tweeting the N-word in, you know, 2002 or whatever, instead of paying attention to, like, the racism that's happening right now and the things that you could actually do to try, not just racism, just fucking all of the issues, like nationalism and, like I said, fascism, sexism, everything. Like, kind of let's focus on it now. You know, I don't want to get super into the weeds on politics, but fucking Bryan Singer has one of his movies is nominated for Best Picture right now. And that's, you know, people get the pass. Like, there's this is in the moment and people aren't paying attention to it. And they're allowing something like that happens. And it feels like some, like, a bigger issue to fucking talk about instead of worrying about that Trevor Lee said the N-word 7 years ago. I'm sorry, but, like, get over it. Just let's work on now. And I mean, that's, in some ways, you could say that that's self-serving, because I had social media since I was young, too, and I bet that if someone wanted to look through some stuff, they could. I did fucking stand-up comedy. Like, if someone wanted to look through it, they could probably find things that I said in the past that weren't the best, trying to push, you know, just trying to maybe be edgy or just trying to be funny. You can take things out of context. You can do whatever. So, I mean, it's, I get where it comes from. That said, I didn't see these tweets. The only thing I saw was, you know, subscribe PewDiePie. That's just lame because PewDiePie sucks on top of being, like, a racist, but whatever. Like, to me, I'm just like, yeah, like, let's rein this in. It's been fun, I guess. It was a fun, like, kind of thing for everyone to have fun dragging people for stuff they said in the past, but we need to probably try to move forward and, like, focus on right now.
Yeah. And, you know, and then everyone's like, yeah, you should have him deleted, but you can always find this stuff.
Right, yeah, exactly.
AEW, have you heard anything in the more news? I mean, I guess they kind of broke down in the Observer how about the old Jericho signing and, you know, and just kind of what we all thought. But it doesn't seem like they're, you know, they've progressed anything right now. Have you heard anything?
No. The only, I mean, kind of mentioned it before, but I mean, fuck, we could talk about it somewhat openly. I don't know. I don't have any information. I haven't talked to anybody who knows anything. But, you know, MJF got pulled from an action show, which is a promotion that me and you pay attention to. And yep. He got pulled around the same time that they announced that he was, you know, had a contract. And he's pulled from the show on that specific date. And then now it seems like there's a little bit of report coming out that probably it's because there is something going on that date. I heard something about a press conference with OWE around that time. So, I mean, that's be weird to think that they're flying someone like MJF to China for something like that. But who knows? I mean, who knows what's actually happening there? But, I mean, that's about it. I mean, it was something, again, that we mentioned. The only reason why I noticed it at the time is because, or why we would notice, is because we actually pay attention to action, you know, so it just happened to be a promotion that we pay attention to, but we don't have any, I don't have any information or anything else beyond that.
Yeah, and what else was I gonna ask? Yeah, I guess that's about it. Anything else you want to talk about before we head out of this thing?
No, not particularly.
All right, cool, then let's get right into it. NXT UK episode 27. This NXT UK has been pretty. It doesn't seem like the fan base online is really digging the shows, huh?
No, and I don't mind it as much with being only 1 hour, but
The hour helped.
losing its luster, or not even luster, but it really feels like it never had any buzz online. They're, I guess, taping episodes at Access for Royal Rumble. Is that what I heard?
Yeah, that's what I heard.
So that's bad news. Because that crowd's probably going to be dead and not know who any of the guys are.
Yeah.
But we'll see how that goes.
Their lack of star power, man. That's what it boils down to. They haven't. Honestly, I don't know if they've created. Like, Gibson, I mean, feels like he hasn't gotten any more over than he was.
Right.
Dunn was over because he'd been on their TV for months, or I mean, for years. Mustache Mountain was over. Tony Storm was over to an extent. I felt like Rhea Ripley's, like, the only one who's gotten more over from the TV than anybody else on the roster, really.
Right. Devlin, I mean, Devlin...
Devlin has.
Feels... To me, I don't know if he's more over, but he feels like he's a much better performer.
Yes.
So, it's like... I don't know if that'll translate, because I don't hear... Again, you talked about there's just no buzz. I don't hear any buzz about him. Other than in the circles of people that I talked to who were already big fans of Devlin from...
Prior.
The Irish scene already. Progress. OTT... Fight Club, you know, like stuff like that. So I haven't heard more people taking notice of him.
And that's the thing, man. They just haven't. They're not developing stars. I don't know how. They only have a handful, and so they kind of got to protect him. You can't just waste it. I mean, or prostitute who you do have, because then you don't want to lose their luster either. It's a tough hoe what they're trying to do right now. I ain't lying.
Yeah,
there's a lot of the stuff feels really sterile. Some of the angles are just there, or they're too busy, or they just make the wrong decisions. And I think this show episode showed a lot of things that's good with the promotion, but what also where you take off the cloak. You kind of get the Emperor with no clothes on. You have a lot of warts everywhere, and I don't know if you have enough clothing to cover up the blemishes and stuff.
yeah.
I mean, let's go right into it. We get this Banks Devlin recap, right?
Yeah.
Very mediocre. I mean, it was not even a very good recap. And if you watch NXT proper the later on that evening, they had all these kick-ass recaps of feuds going into TakeOver. And we get this Banks Devlin recap, which was worse than anything they aired that evening on NXT when it came to feud recaps. Am I right? Or
yeah, and I wonder what their plan is for TakeOver, because part of that, too, is that this week they're coming out of TakeOver, and you know the regular NXT is going into their TakeOver, so that really does... It kind of diminishes one brand a lot comparatively, because it feels like one brand is hype and excited and building yeah. into a crescendo, while the other brand is like starting to kind of come back, and just having them compared to each other back to back is not a good situation. So you would hope that they plan their schedule so that the takeovers are further apart in the future.
Yeah, I agree. But yeah, but this whole recap here, feud recap, was kind of there. It's like, do we even need it? Because it didn't get you hyped. And I understand, like, a lot of these feud packages they put on, the NXTs, if you miss the TV, you can catch up on these feud recaps. So I totally understand it. And sometimes I'll complain, like, do we really need this? But this one, it was like, who gives a shit? It was so unproductive and it was so mediocre. It was almost laughable. You know, and then we get this next segment, where you get Pete Dunne's out, and he's kind of cutting a promo, and then Gallus interrupts, and Dunne is, you know, so obvious what they were doing, which was Dunne was going to break their fingers, and then Walter's out. This whole angle felt busy. You use Gallus, who you guys they've been pushing pretty hard as the number one heel group since they started airing episodes, but here they're just used as foils, where they're just they're getting used to get Dunn and Walter over, where the three of them can't even they even have the numbers game, but they can't get the advantage on Dunn or Walter, so that makes them look cheaper or you know less. I liked Walter staring at the title though. But, man, I still thought there was a lot going on. The angle felt like it was a little too busy and should just be about Dunn and Walter. I don't even know why they brought Gallus out for it. I mean, obviously they're going to get involved in the angle. But right now they should be starting off with the Dunn-Walter business and bringing Gallus out. To me, all it did was just clutter up the angle and get you confused about what the business is about. What do you think?
Yeah, and I think that it weirdly it sets up a weird presentation for Walter. I can't tell. It feels like he's a babyface based on this, kind of, but that to me that just kind of hurts the situation. It felt like the way that he barnstormed down to the ring after Dunn had beat Coffee, it would have made more sense to just not interact with Gallus, cut that off there, and then go into the Walter Dunn like you're talking about and firmly establish what Walter is, because I feel like now I don't get it. And if we're going to establish what Walter is, I think the one thing we could use without establishing him is the Austrian Anomaly. I guess that's his new nickname, because everyone has to have a WWE nickname, and
that's terrible.
Not great. I think I heard Voices of Wrestling saying like the word doesn't even make sense, and it's like, I mean, it does make sense for what they're going for. He's anomalous because he's big,
right?
And he's a big thing, he stands out because of his size. So there's, you know, trying to say like he's not even an anomaly, that doesn't make it. It's like, I mean, based on what the word means and you can tell what they're going for, that makes sense. The problem is it just sounds bad, which is, you know, yeah, it doesn't make sense with Walter. He's already got a kick-ass nickname as the Ring General. Why can't you just call him that?
And he has this aura about him. I mean, he doesn't need all these gimmicks. I mean, him being on that stage, he looks like the biggest star in the company just by the way he handles himself, you know?
Yep. And the big jacket, and yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Dunn tries it, but he's only 5'6" or whatever the fuck tall he is. I don't know, 5'8".
Right.
Maybe even 5'11". But, I mean, Walter's a legit 6'5" guy.
Yeah, have you seen Walter in person?
Yeah.
Okay, because yeah,
6'3", 6'5". I mean, he was I mean, I'm a tall guy. I'm 6 feet. So, I mean, a lot, most wrestlers I tower over. Or right. I'm their size. Walter's bigger than me.
Yeah, because I heard someone talking about that he's not a giant, which I guess, like, he's not the Big Show, but he's pretty, I mean, he is a pretty big dude.
He's a big dude, but he's, like, for me, like, I mean, I played guys in basketball and football growing up in that size, so it wasn't like, I'm not awed by it, but when you compare him to a lot of the indie guys who are 5'9", 175 pounds, the discrepancy is freaking huge, you know?
Right, for sure.
I mean, like me, my buddy Ben Zaney, Ben's like 6'2", 6'3", and I think he was like looking Walter like right near the eye type thing.
Right.
And Ben's, you know, he's big, big boned and stuff. But, you know, I think Ben and I are like anomalies and a lot of the wrestling type of guys, you know. But Walter next to like Johnny P. Johnny P is not short, but he's, you know, 150 pounds soaking wet type thing, you know?
Right, for sure.
And stuff. So, but yeah, Walter just has that presence here. Then we have, Sid Scala by himself. Guess they're giving Johnny Sane a little breather. And he wants to congratulate Gibson and Drake, but they're not feeling any of it because they feel disrespected by those guys for not, from pushing him above Mustache Mountain early on, and you know, we'll hear from them next week. Fine segment, you know, it's like one of those segments where it really doesn't mean anything. It's just teasing you. Hey, we'll say something next week. So it's more building to next week, which makes you. I mean, is this a segment that's going to make you tune in? No, but it's like, you know, it's fine foreshadowing for next week's show, I guess, right?
Yeah, yeah, it's good. It'll get you, I mean, it gets you a little bit excited. It's not like a major draw, but it is, you know, you want to see where they go moving forward.
Right, and then we get the Nia Samuels match. I didn't think anything of it here. What about you?
Fine.
Versus Austin, I guess her name is.
Lana Austin. It was funny because I was watching this and I remember that she was on a Division Pro show and had a pretty solid match with Shayna. And then I was thinking about how, you know, at the time I plugged it because I had seen plenty of Lana Austin and Shayna was able to have a good match with her. And, she, you know, Lana Austin's not that good. And it's just funny because then I was like, oh, Division Pro, that they did like one show that was supposed to be a whole thing. Either way, she's here kind of doing job duty. And then just to make Nina look good. And I wonder, because it kind of feels like they're doing a little bit of like building people back up. And you don't know if they're like first to be set up people. That's the interesting thing about NXT and NXT UK. They do build up like middle level people to put over bigger people pretty well, too. They like actually focus on doing that, which is smart. But you do always
like right now, everybody is like feels like a jobber who's not pushed, you know?
Right. But then sometimes... thing about NXT, and I don't know if NXT UK will be the same, is that sometimes like out of nowhere someone like this who you could think that's what's going on will actually get a push to like a championship level,
right,
not just like a challenge. So yeah. Oh, but that was the other thing. So then I was thinking about Division Pro randomly because of that, and I was like, fuck, nobody talked about that. It was like one show, and then randomly I heard them talking about it on another podcast today. They brought up Division Pro, which I thought was so funny because I'm like, wow, that's just fucking serendipitous. Did you watch that at all, the Division Pro?
I have not. No.
They did Kyle O'Reilly versus Tom Lawler, right before Kyle went to WWE. It was pretty good. They had a few. It was interesting. Like the concept was going to be that they had weight divisions.
Huh.
And yeah, so they had like Hollis versus Leo Rush that was pretty good. Lawler versus Kyle O'Reilly that was decent. Lana versus Shayna. It was an interesting concept. I wish that it stuck around, actually.
Okay. Then we get a recap of the tag title match, which was, you know, fine, right? Anything?
Yeah, that's fine.
Which led to a Mustache Mountain interview, which, you know, them being them wanting a rematch. Hey, I didn't take anything really away from it. Well, what about you?
Yeah, no, nothing special here.
Then we get a Toni Storm interview, and I felt this was her best interview to date, where she had a euphoria about her. She, like, seemed really happy to get the title back. And then we didn't get any stupid things like Toni time. She didn't seem scripted. It seemed like this was, like, one of these backstage where she just seemed happy and made perfect sense. What did you think about it?
Yeah, definitely a good way to describe it. Very solid. I wonder if how much of like the other stuff was kind of pre-done early before they knew when stuff was happening, and so they weren't kind of correcting for her not necessarily working as a promo, and now she's getting better and they're putting more effort. I don't know, like, if this is a good sign to mean that they've course corrected, because we both kind of questioned putting the title on her, I think, over Rhea Ripley based on just the way things were going. So we'll see if this is a course correction that things are going to get better for her. I'm not sure. We'll see.
Never mind.
Yeah.
Then we get an Eddie Downes match. Eddie Downes squash. I don't know. I just don't see much in Eddie Downes, honestly. What about you?
I did. I always kind of did, even as a babyface, and then the heel turn felt really good and had been working pretty well, but I don't think that him being in an NXT UK setting where he's toning down the action in the ring is going to help him. And I thought that it might, because his heel has been solid, that then kind of just paring down his stuff and doing more effective. But honestly, if he doesn't have a lot going on, he's kind of boring.
Yeah, like his character work seemed like it's been good.
Yeah.
But I just don't like his ring work at all.
Yeah, and I think that being able to have a lot of bells and whistles helps keep his matches interesting, but when you take a lot of that out to be more toned down, it's glaringly obvious that his in-ring work is kind of boring. And the fucked up thing is that he's got like a judo background, and I think that if he brought some more of that into his work, it could actually make a difference, just having more dynamic stuff. But he's doing just like big body slams primarily, and then teasing that
kind
of crucifix bomb over and over again. But yeah,
then we get the main event of Jordan Devlin and Travis Banks. I thought this match was tremendous until the shit finish, which I don't know why they did that finish. Why couldn't they? I mean, they went to the double count out finish where they both couldn't get back in the ring. Why couldn't they just... And then they went to this big brawl afterwards. Why couldn't they just... the finish be the big brawl, and they couldn't get back in the ring? Which I think would have fitted the story just fine. Don't you think?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, yeah. I didn't personally... I felt like the count-out became too obvious at that point. Which in some ways is good, because it means that they kind of told the story. I heard someone say that you know, like... The way that the match was worked, it made sense that they would fight to no finish and keep fighting because they were going balls to the walls.
Right. That's the thing, though. I mean, it was just a regular count out to finish, though.
Right.
And then they went and brawled. Yeah, skip the lazy 10 count shit. You just keep them fighting on the floor and let them... The hate-filled brawl would have... That would have been fine with the story they were telling. But I thought, it didn't work in the grand scheme. But, man, I thought Travis Banks was amazing in this match. I thought it was very hate-filled to start. I thought Banks, Tope, early on had purpose and bad intentions. Like, it was really early looking. Banks' shine was pure violent. I mean, just pure violence. And that's what we needed here. He wanted revenge. And he just beat the living piss out of fucking Jordan Devlin. We get a clip by Devlin to set up the heat, but no, Banks escapes from it. Back to the knee, and a backstabber sets up the heat finally for Devlin. Devlin hits a Spanish fly to the floor. I was like, holy fuck, you know, that was a big time move. Hated the no sell on the second Spanish fly that was in the ring. With Nigel yelling, "Fighting spirit!" That I think that's WWE code for no sell. I'm not sure. Great near fall on the belly to back. Again, not a fan of the finish. I felt the finish should have just been the post-match where they're just brawling all over the place. I thought Banks' shine was amazing. Felt Devlin's heat didn't match Banks' violence, and I think Devlin needs to take it up a notch for the match to get a little better. I still give it 3 3/4 stars because I really, really liked the story they told. But I think Devlin needs to crank up the violence a little bit to match Banks, because I thought Banks brought the violence here. What do you think of the whole thing, man?
I'm with you. I think I'm going to do a little kind of podcast retweet, like do some signal boosting here. But you talked about it. I think Devlin should drop the double Spanish fly in general. A lot of his matches, it seems lately, have been having multiple Spanish flies, so I could do with just the one to the floor. That's really cool. But the thing that I wanted to kind of mention that I heard said by Alan Forel on his podcast over on the Torch was selling is a tool, not a rule. And I liked it because it speaks to something that I've said in the past, is that I feel like there's some people who, especially when they're getting into the concept of like looking at wrestling critically and star rating, they pick up these certain things and then they just have a checklist where they say, if this happens and this happens, then that means the match is good. And if this happens and this happens, that means the match is bad. And I think that if a lot of wrestlers have that in their mind as well, because they see the star ratings and how it works and you just put all that stuff together, you miss the nuances of what makes wrestling. Now, that said, there's a reason why he's the Kiwi Buzzsaw and not the Kiwi Toolbox, because he's not a guy who knows when to use different tools. Travis Banks is a go-go-go kind of guy, and so he does stuff like that in situations where maybe the tool of selling could be used better than a buzzsaw. But, you know, it works, and you're right. This match had great action. I don't know that I would have been happier with this match on TakeOver. Now, I would assume that if they had had a match on TakeOver, it wouldn't have been this exact same match. But, but that said, if they did have this match or a similar match with a different finish, I don't know that I would have seen it as a major upgrade on TakeOver, unfortunately. It was good, and they did a great job for the story that they were telling, but I felt like, unfortunately, Devlin, not terribly, but it feels like he's missing what's been making him really stand out lately, which is more character and more focus. Yeah. This match was a lot more go-go-go, but it worked for, again, the setting that they're doing. The guy is, I mean, obviously a great wrestler. I don't think that there's any doubt about that. Really cool stuff going on with him right now in OTT. David Starr turned on him. Super awesome to see him working this really crazy passionate babyface over there, and then this heel here. There's a lot of back and forth there to see him getting to show off both sides of his talents. But this match, I think once I got to the point where I realized, okay, this is definitely going to end in a count out now, and then they go to the brawl and the story that they're telling, then I'm like, okay, I get why they did the match this way and why this makes sense, because this is a setup to continue this feud.
And not a, things, right?
Yeah, and not a blow-off. This is to keep it going, which is great because it was a good tease. It got me excited. Now I want to see Devlin turn up the heat and really, you know, take it to him in a long format match where he just grinds him down. And then Travis Banks fighting from underneath, hot, fiery babyface. You talk about his shine is fucking just brutal. I mean, that's a big match. So I like that they're giving us a setup. I'm with you. I think the count out, again, it felt too choreographed at that point when it hit. I was like, this is
that's the term. Yep. Choreographed.
It's like, oh, this is okay. Now I see this is a count out. Boom. And then, yeah, if they had just fallen out of the ring, brawled, just kept going, you could still do the count out, but they're just killing each other the whole time. I think I'm with you. I think that would have worked better, especially for where you're going. Clearly going to move forward with the story.
Yeah, I'm not even a fan of chair shots. I even bought into them pulling chairs out and whacking each other, you know, and getting that double D key or some shit like that. And that leads into the brawl. Yeah, you know, and I can see some people loving that, the no-sell on the Spanish fly spot. I'm like, you know, there's certain times where I'm like, yeah, it is. It's like, that's a great coin that Alan Forel said. Because there's some moments when a no-sell makes sense and stuff like that. But to me, I've always been like one of them guys who, when we get that no-sell, it should be a reason, or it should be character based, or I mean, even little things like Hulkamania when he'd Hulk up, you know, I could buy it because he's hulking up, or Lawler with the strap coming down. Just even just little things to say. Now I'm. It's like, you know, the switch has been flipped. A lot of times we just get the flip switching without any rhyme or reason or any notice, and I felt that kind of what happened here.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
being natural element of the story they were saying telling.
Right. I think a no sell should feel defiant and like it's standing in the face of everything that's just been happening, and a big moment that was built to and the crowd is into it, and this felt like it came out of nowhere. So yeah.
And that's a problem with a lot of it nowadays. There's a lot of those no sells that it should be the big moment, but it ends up being just a moment in the match because it to me ends up meaning nothing it could have been meant so much, much more. Again, just like I was saying, we got some of the good, the bad, and the ugly on this show. I mean, we got this great match, shitty finish. You know, we get some no-sells there. We had this, you know, the opening was, the opening angle was all cluttered up. Didn't know what's going on. Feels like they're cheapening Walter already up. But then we go and have this really good, great starting of a feud match. And then we see at least Toni Storm look pretty good here on a promo for a change. So we had some positives, but yeah, but a lot of the negatives, again, it just doesn't seem like people care.
Yeah, for sure.
And then we go to NXT proper. And we open up with a Velveteen Dream promo. And it's interrupted by Cole and Fish. And right here, you know, same amount of people, less people. But the angle got over because it didn't get overly cluttered like the Jake Gallus angle with Dunn and Walter, you know. Here he had really three people out, and there he had five. When the, you know, that just gets more people on the table, gets a little bit more cluttered. And here they had the right amount, and they had a really fun angle because of it. What do you think of this?
Yeah, I thought that this was, like you said, it was done super well. Dream looked good opening up. I think part of it, too, is that the heels had the numbers game and they didn't get undermined in it, which is part of the issue with the other one. I think, made sense in that regard, too. My only issue is just Bobby Fish being, like, feeling like the setup guy for Adam Cole, because...
Agreed.
To me, I'm just like, Bobby Fish is, I mean, I can't, better. There's very few ways that I think of Adam Cole as superior to Bobby Fish. Like, in-ring, promo, I think Bobby's better at both, you know? So, to me, it's just him being the setup guy just feels counterintuitive, but that's the only thing. That's my only issue with it.
Yeah, I mean, the bottom line is they feel money is with Adam Cole. And that's us making it, you know, we disagree. We think Fish is a better performer and can be. I will say Cole does have more charisma, but that doesn't mean Fish is lacking with charisma.
No.
Like with the Velveteen Dream, the odds are against him, but he's able to shift the tide for just a little bit and then run. You know, Dunn shifted the tide and standing in the ring defiant 1-on-3, which was, you know, nuts. Here, Velveteen Dream realized, okay, I got the momentary advantage over two people. Now it's time to hightail it to the fucking top of the stairs. And I liked that difference too. Then we get a Baszler Belair video package again. Awesome stuff, right?
Yeah, really great.
And then we get an incredible sprint with Burch and Lorcan versus Eichner and Bartel. Again, Eichner needs to learn to set up his big moves by using heel tactics if he's going to work heel, because he's doing way too many babyface stuff in this match. Again, it felt like a Texas Tornado match, but super fun TV bout, big moves, big dives, everyone looking like $1 million on offense. I don't know how... if that really helps Aigner and Bartel to be losing on NXT proper when it looks like they're getting a push on the NXT UK show. That's another tough thing to talk about. But I thought this was a blast. You know, this is only Lurkin kicking ass again. I mean, being the TV guy, TV match guy, he's awesome. What'd you make of it?
Yeah, a lot of radical high space awesome action. Everything looks snug. Everything looks legit. Everyone looks like ass kickers. But you're right. I mean, there's almost no structure to it. It feels really similar to talked about it with the job match that the European Union guys did. That it feels like they're sticking with that theme. That here on NXT, they're more just like spot. I hate to say it, but like almost spot guys, like spot monkeys. Just the way that they have high octane matches that lack a lot of basic tag structure and just kind of hit a bunch of crazy action. So I don't know if that's the plan, just to try to get them over by getting noticed on NXT, but not necessarily fitting the character. But I do worry that WWE has this idea. It feels like they really do believe in the idea that like you can compartmentalize stuff and it's okay, and that the fans don't see the cross pollination as being like confusing and hurting the ability to draw. Because I mean, you know, you've got the whole idea that wrestlers can act however they want on Twitter. They don't have to stay in character. You've got Vince being, you know, kind of heelish on one show and babyface-ish on another. And then you got these guys who kind of feel like they're the same characters, but having totally different styles of matches on the two different shows that are literally playing back to back. It does seem like you're just confusing the market and you're not really, but I mean, they do need to make stars, and maybe having them just get noticed on NXT TV is enough to kind of help make them into stars. Yeah. So we'll see.
It's an idea. Then we get a Ciampa Aleister Black video package with, again, which again kicked ass. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, all the video package stuff on here has been fantastic.
Fantastic, right?
Yeah.
Especially when you compare him to the Banks Devlin one, which was so terrible compared to these ones. It's just mind blowing. Then we get Kairi Sane and Los Shirai. How do you say her name again?
Io Shirai.
Io Shirai. They should be on the main roster in the tag team division already. They were fantastic in this match. What did you think?
Yeah, I mean they kick ass. Great stuff. Who knows? Maybe this is setting up for the turn. I think if Io Shirai turned on Kairi and went heel, I think it wouldn't be terrible. But yeah, I mean, if they're going to do a tag team division, they probably should just keep them together and have them on the main roster as a big part of that.
Yep. Then we get the confrontation of the Horsewomen versus Sane and Los and Io Shirai. They're just so much. They're so much more polished than the Horsewomen right now. Yeah, it's almost like I know you get better working with better people, but it just feels, I don't know. It feels like they're really not ready for these girls. What do you think?
Yeah, it's an interesting setup. I mean, I guess it makes sense just in the sense that you want like good, solid workers to carry people, but it does seem like, I don't know, you worry about like backlash from people not getting into them. And then again, you know, I talked about it with Rhonda, but it's not a good comparison for them either to be compared to Shayna, who took to it. I mean, also people look at it like Shayna took to it so fast because so many people either had no clue that Shayna had been wrestling for a while before she came into WWE, or on the other side, if they do, they either didn't actually watch any of her matches or they just watched one or two and then said she was bad. So there's a lot of people who think that like Shayna got really good really fast in NXT, and so these girls who actually are coming in to NXT cold as wrestlers, being nowhere near as good as her, doesn't make them look good, and then putting them in there with much better workers that feels like they're being forced into that spot doesn't help with people's kind of perception of them.
Exactly. That leads us to the main event of Velveteen Dream versus Bobby Fish. What say you about this match?
Great action. Loved the way that they used the man on the floor. Really thought that they did a great job of kind of working with the numbers game to be kind of part of it. Loved the quick shine from Dream to open up. I thought that he's just screams babyface now. Even though like his character hasn't changed a lot, it's just you look at the way that he wrestles and he's so over the top and flamboyant that it works. In a lot of ways, kind of similar. It's funny because I don't think that that's necessarily someone who he's shown a lot of affinity for, but he does do a big elbow drop, but kind of screams Macho Man in that sense, where Macho Man's kind of over the top flamboyantness still worked as a babyface. You just kind of, you know, were enthralled by it and didn't really think of it as being, I guess, like ostentatious. Didn't think of it as like a negative aspect.
Right.
But, you know, it's funny because he hasn't really done a lot of, you know, Macho Man kind of cosplay, but in a lot of ways he's similar to him as a babyface. Thought the selling of the knee was done really well by Dream throughout, got the crowd into him big, and again continuing to be kind of over the top wall selling, I think helps endear him as well to the crowd. So yeah, I thought really, really great stuff all around, especially from
Dream. And then yeah, I enjoyed the match. I thought Dream, I like Dream with the Randy Savage axe handle, the floor. Fish with a nasty dragon screw to set up the heat. I was kind of disappointed in Fish's heat, where they didn't really give him one. Fish back to the knee, but again, he's cut off with a Arn Anderson like spinning buster. So they're doing everything they can to give him a heat, but then take it right away before he uses it. Dream sell of the Fish's knee bar was great. Fun match, but flawed, as in it felt like Dream took way too much of it. And I know Dream is positioned higher on the card than Fish, and that's kind of how they worked it, where Dream is at a higher level, so he didn't have to sell as much. He was on working more on top type dynamic. And it was clearly about, this is a match worked on showing everyone where you are on the card position-wise. But I enjoyed it for what it was. Then we get a Ricochet promo, and Gargano attacks, and then Ciampa blindsides Ricochet. Then we had the guy from Lucha Underground comes out, and we get this big shalom happen. But it all started off with, and then we got the big teasing of Gargano and Ciampa, and Gargano's wife Candice had to come out and pull Johnny away. I don't know. I don't like them regrouping. But it's a story, but I think it's a lame story. What about you?
Yeah, not a huge fan of much of it. Really. The only thing that I liked out of the angle was Aleister Black just really kicking the shit out of Ciampa in the corner when he got a chance. I thought that did a good job to show the aggression out of Aleister, which makes sense in the kind of in the setting, just with everything that they've shown. I guess it kind of helps because you got the idea that Gargano was the one that injured him, so he had all that rage from that, and it's transitioning over to Ciampa because they're still connected to each other throughout the angle. But other than like that part of it, I really think that these two angles should be separated more, and it really feels like they're clearly just forcing it and keeping Gargano and Ciampa interacting with each other at a point when they really should have already stopped this.
Yeah. Yep. But hey, overall though, I enjoyed the show. I thought it was a good closeout. What do you think?
Yeah, I thought a good go home episode. All the talked about it, but all the video packages were great and helped get you excited for the takeover. So we'll see how that goes.
Speaking of takeover, I mean, and speaking of our sponsor, Pro Wrestling Only. wrestlingonly.com. Check out prowrestlingonly.com to explore other podcasts, along with match reviews, features, and retrospective reviews of wrestling books, video games, and matches, playlists, wrestler appearances in non-wrestling TV shows and movies, and more. You can also join the conversation by joining up at the Pro Wrestling Only forums. We've been online for over a decade, and with over 2,000 registered members and an archive of over 4 million threads, our message board is a vibrant community. Also, whether you want to talk about a match discussion, for past and present, check out all this and more at www.prowrestlingonly.com. All right. And then we get to the most recent Ring of Honor show. Pull it up here. Ring of Honor. Honor reigns supreme. We open up with the Shinobi Shadow Squad versus Skylar, Hollis, and Quinn. What'd you make of this?
Liked the opening promo stuff from Skylar. Really liked the heel team. Skylar and Hollis did a great job. Could have done without the commentary talking about Ila Eisen as the blue chipper of the group. Like, he really went out of their way to say that. And I did see him. He had a decent match recently, I think, with, like, I can't remember who, but it was on the big show that they just did. Clearly they were giving him, like, a bit of a showcase on a big show. So they're into him for some reason. I thought that the heel team really looked like the stars. Even Quinn, I thought, looked really good. Hollis and Skylar obviously are great. But it felt like a waste to give the win to the other team. But clearly they see something in Eisen, so they're going to push him forward. I don't know if it's quite there. The match 2.25 star. It was fine. But the heels looked really good. Their heat was really good. But other than that, there was not a lot to it, really. And I felt like the babyface group is being pushed just because they're kind of the legacy act. Or they got one guy that they think is the thing, and then they got Cheeseburger when the other team, I think, probably better team. But one of the positives, and I talked about it when they were introducing the Trios tag belts, is it's nice because they actually have Trios tag team belts. So it feels like these two groups that really feel like cohesive trios seem like they're fighting for something, at least, because there is the idea that it being the best trio actually means something, and that is not just like a throwaway match to get people on the card.
Fair enough. I enjoyed it too. I gave it 2.5 stars. I liked the faces with a nice fun shine. Hollis with an elbow to set up the heat, which I liked. Solid stuff. Solid opener. Nothing blow away, but good, solid wrestling we got here. Then we got Haskins versus the Beer City Bruiser. Again, I gave it 2.5 stars. I enjoyed what we got here, which was Haskins working underneath, and he was undercover or underneath the whole entire time. Can't always have it when your dad retired. I mean, is undercover, takes a breather. It's just something we got to deal with, right? Yeah. What did you think of the Haskins? I gave it 2.5. What do you think of Haskins and Beer City Bruiser?
I gave it 2.5 also. I thought that they did a good job working with the size differential. The arm work from Haskins was good. He's very aggressive fighting from underneath. Beer City Bruiser didn't kind of just give it up, and he fought like he was the bigger of the two. So yeah, I thought that it was a good way to kind of get over Haskins as a new guy on your roster that you're going to be clearly focusing on here.
And then we got Best Friends versus Juice and Finlay. What'd you make of this one?
Good action. I thought that the commentary did a good job kind of putting everything over and putting it into context. Finlay and Juice looked really good. I thought that Best Friends felt serious here, even with a little bit of messing around. They seem like a team that you can actually work with. Obviously, Juice bumping and selling has done really well. Just solid stuff. Gave it 2.5 also. Really just good tag team, and it feels like, you know, bringing some life into kind of the middle in the ROH roster in general is not – not a bad thing moving forward here.
Yeah, I went 2 3/4, and I thought the main difference between this and the undercard so far was I thought the timing on this was great. And that was the difference for me here. But other than that, you know, good solid stuff. Then we get Flip Gordon and Tracy Williams, and Tracy Williams blows out his ACL, and he'll be gone. I'm not kidding, Tracy Williams. I mean, Flip, he'll be out until hopefully he'll be back for the big Madison Square Garden card. But that, yeah, that's a big blow for Flip and a guy who, you know, I think has a big future in Ring of Honor. What'd you make of the match?
Yeah, maybe, unless he goes to AEW or whatever, but that's the whole thing. The match was feeling good. Flip obviously blows out his knee pretty early on. The commentary, I don't know if it's done in post or what, but they were clearly trying to, like, put it over as a narrative. I don't know. Like, that's why I'm, like, wondering, like, was this the real injury? Or, because I thought I had heard he got injured somewhere else. Like, was this an angle to cover the injury? Was the commentary done in post? I was a little bit confused because I don't know the timeline super well, but they're talking about how, you know, they did a good job mentioning that he was supposed to be Colt Cabana's tag team partner, and now that means he's going to get replaced in the tag wars or whatever. So I think that they did a good job getting the angle side of this out as well. This was primarily just an angle to really like an injury angle. It almost felt like for Flip, even though it was an actual injury.
Yeah, what do you think of the Kingdom versus the Luchasaurus, Hurricane, and Delirious?
It was a fun kind of attraction match in the middle of the card. I thought that everyone worked really well for what they were doing. Kingdom gets the win. I thought that, you know, that's like, obviously that makes sense. The other team is kind of nostalgia / comedy act. It was fine for what it was. I mean, I gave it 2 stars because realistically I didn't get much out of it, and I didn't necessarily think that with Taven kind of being a guy that seems like they're presenting like could be their champion shortly, it doesn't quite make sense to have him in this setting, just because even though he does get the win and looks strong, it does feel like you are kind of putting him in the attraction joke match on the card. But I mean, they run a lot of shows, but I mean, this is going to be on the Honor Club and shown, but it was just interesting to have a guy that you're positioning, it feels like you're positioning as a championship contender, in something that's kind of a jokey match. What did you think of it, Pete?
Oh yeah, I'm sorry. I enjoyed it enough. Again, in the 2.5-star range, which has been pretty much the whole undercard. I felt the early comedy was kind of bullshit. There was a small shine. I thought Delirious FIP was fine. I liked them working over his ribs. We get this tag to Hurricane. You know, it was what it was. Then the first big match we get now is PJ Black versus Bandido. And what'd you make of this one, Tim?
I didn't hate it, but it felt like Black really felt like an afterthought. It was weird. I mean, it felt like the commentary was trying to really put over Black as bigger than he is, talking about being like a foundational star of high flying and, you know, kind of helping build this new style. And I just don't really see that at all from him. He really felt like he came out of nowhere when he showed up in NXT. And then, you know, obviously he did wrestle with his dad before that, but he wasn't really like well known or thought of as someone who was influential. Bandido looked good. I thought that they did a good job of having him just show off his stuff. His charisma and what gets him over in PWG is not quite the same in ROH. It's clear. I give the match 2 3/4. I thought that there was a good back and forth, some awesome spots, some action and stuff, but realistically did not feel, it felt like kind of a showcase match that was missing the big sizzle to make it stand out as a showcase.
And then we get Kelly. I know. And then we get the Ka versus Titus. Oh no, I'm sorry. My turn about it. I enjoyed it. I gave it 3.25. We get this like standoff early on. Bandido goes to the air early. Black suckers Bandido in and starts to get heat on him. But and Black's working the arm and the back. Built to the big moves late in, I mean, the match real well, I thought. The walking the dog is a great heel move, I think. I think that's fantastic. Love the near fall on Black's cockiness. I really thought Black did a really good job with his character work in this match. And for the first time, first meeting, really, 3 1/4, I think they'll get better because I think they'll be more polished next time around. And they'll know what they're expecting. And they should be ready for that. Then we get Cobb versus Titus versus Gresham. And Shane Taylor was originally supposed to be part of it, but he decides he's not going to do this match. He doesn't need to prove anything. You know, sometimes in this type of three-way in this match style, they miss psychology a lot. And because it becomes about all the moves and stuff, but you can still tell a great story in this structure. All you got to do is try. I ended up with 2 3/4. I enjoyed, you know, Black. I just couldn't deal. I just didn't, not Black, but it was just good stuff. What would you think of it? But it was a little too short, and it was like missing something.
Yeah, yeah. I could see that. I think that they did a pretty good job keeping with a narrative. I thought that Cobb, basically the easy story is just that Cobb is the monster, and he shows that off pretty well throughout, working with his size and being dominant. And then you've got, you know, the stuff with Gresham using his smart tricks and stuff that he can, but he can't really get rolling just because of getting interrupted. I thought, honestly, this is one of the rare situations where I would say that turning it into a three-way rather than a four-way was a positive, and normally having an even number of guys or wrestlers can would usually help, but I think that actually this was better because of the three-way, just because, not just because to say that Shane Taylor's not good, because actually Shane Taylor seems like he's improved quite a bit. He's lost some weight, he's moving pretty well from what I've seen, but because I think that having two competing monsters in the setting wouldn't have worked to help keep that clear story, and I think it would have just muddled things a lot more. So I thought that helped. I could definitely see it feeling like it's missing, and I do think that it was confusing because they didn't make it clear. It's proving ground, it's survival, or it's not survival.
Yeah.
That's the deal. If they just wanted it to be on-the-spot title match, that's fine. I could have gotten with that, but then shouldn't call it, like, four-corner survival, because that usually means elimination style. And they even kind of said that it was elimination style, but then it wasn't. I gave it 3 1/4, though, because I thought that everyone played their roles really well. I thought Rhett Titus looked great, honestly, for, you know, just how long he's been here and kind of just a mid-card nothing guy. And ROH is in great shape. He hit his spots really well. Awesome-looking dropkick. Played his character. So I thought he looked really good. And then, you know, Gresham and Cobb obviously are both fantastic. So I thought they did a great job here for a three-way, but I can definitely see where you're saying that it felt kind of quick and like it was missing something, because I think what it was missing is like a clear narrative, not necessarily just the psychology of the match, but also like a clear narrative of what's on the line here exactly.
And do you feel like the money is in Cobb and PCO eventually?
That's not something that had crossed my mind, but that's definitely a match that I would like to see. I think you could definitely tell a really cool story there, especially just because PCO is like this freak of nature,
Cobb,
monster, but Cobb is like the athletic. But, you know, just getting to show that the difference, like Frankenstein versus the super athlete, I think that could be a lot of fun.
What do you think of Kelly Klein versus Jenny Rose?
I thought it was a good match that for me, maybe just because I don't know the backstory, felt like it was lacking context. I don't understand why this was a street fight, because I haven't seen the build. So I don't know if there has been an issue that makes it make sense for it to be a street fight. I didn't feel like they gave me any way to know that, though. They should have maybe done a video package or had the commentary put it over, but they really didn't. Commentary's talking about how, you know, Kelly Klein is putting the title on in every match now, from now on, or something they say, to, you know, she's a fighting champion. So I felt like that was kind of, that was the main focus of the story, is just that she's always putting the title on and not really the focus of why this is a street fight. But I thought that they brought the intensity. It felt like a big time fight. They did pretty good with the plunder. Didn't feel super gratuitous, but also felt like it was a big part of it. Didn't really feel forced. Kelly Klein kind of feels like Taz. Like, she's like a lot of stuff that's reminiscent of Taz. She's got the team, you know, Team Kelly dojo with her. She, I thought that even the doing the table spot that she did where she jumped off the apron with the girl in the choke, Jenny Rose doing the choke on her, kind of reminded me of the Taz Bigelow stuff, specifically where he would go, went through the ring, went through the ramp. So I just kind of saw that and was like, maybe she might be a fan of his or something. It seems kind of interesting. She does do some suplexes and stuff like that. So yeah, it just, the match itself was pretty good, but I don't have the context, so that kind of hurt it. But they did bring the aggression, brought the fight, brought the violence. I have a 3 stars. I thought that they sold me on the match as it was going through, but probably would have been better with context. What did you?
I enjoyed it.
All right.
You know, 2 3/4. I thought the weapons kind of hid their deficiencies a little bit too. But I thought they did a solid job with the street fight gimmick. Then we got the Briscoes and Silas Young versus Villain Enterprises. I gave this 3 3/4. I thought it was the best match on the show. I loved the dynamic of Skrull with the monsters, and I liked the dynamic of them starting 1 and 2, and they get to finally Skrull comes in, so they get the Brody King and Skrull get to pace the rest of the first part of the day by kicking ass and being very physical early on. I liked how Skrull finally tags in. He starts breaking Downey Young with arm bars. It was a weird physical match. Breaking down the brawl on the floor was interesting. On the floor was fun. Really good stuff. 3 3/4. It had that aggression. It told a story. You also want to see how this match, the Briscoes versus the big monsters, is a story you want to see. I thought this was dynamic overall. What about you?
Yeah, I'm with you. I gave it 3.5. I think I also would have it as the best match on the show. I think that, you know, that's a bunch from me. It's like, you know, I thought that the Villain Enterprise thing was not necessarily something I was super excited for. Not a huge fan of Skrull. But I think that if this is what you're going to use the Villain Enterprises kind of for, I think it works perfectly. This match was very honest. I'll take that kind of talking point that QT used about PCO in the past. This was honest about what it was, and I thought that it was good, fun action, but it had a lot of cool personalities and characters that stood out. There was, you talked about it, but there was a basis of psychology that fit. It got you excited. It had a lot of awesome stuff going on, big spots, PCO doing what he can do and doing it well, and then also having everybody else in there to kind of pick up the action all around it. So, yeah, I'm with you. I thought that this was fantastic. I mean, just really, really... kind of gets everybody over, just a lot of fun, exciting, interesting, and then can get you amped for some more interactions between the Briscoes versus the monsters could be awesome. Definitely a thumbs up from me.
Yeah, it's amazing to see how PCO. I mean, just right off it, you want to see different views with the guy because he's so dying. He's a character who jumps off the screen.
I'm gonna ask you. And do you live in Austin or just near?
Austin.
You do live in Austin. Okay. I was gonna say, to me, people have made a big deal about PCO's whole kind of thing. And I saw somebody on the street the other day when I was driving through Hollywood, and the guy just reminded me of PCO with his look and his everything that was going on. And I was just like, like, maybe because I live in Los Angeles, PCO doesn't come across to me as, like, a freak as much, because people make a big deal about him coming across freakish. And maybe I just see a lot of weirdos normally. So, I know Austin is kind of weird. Do you get the same thing from, like, is that maybe something that people who aren't from bigger cities also, like, see PCO as, like, freakish looking?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah? Okay. Yeah, because to me, I kind of don't... to me, like, I didn't really get that side of it. Just, I guess, again, from, like, being kind of exposed to weirdos all the time.
And Austin's full of weirdos. And stuff. So, yeah. What'd you make of the main event?
I thought...
Lethal and Dalton.
Dalton Castle versus Jay Lethal. I thought the opening was fantastic. The action with... Especially because Dalton has been so out of it with the injuries that having it open up with... You just wouldn't expect it that he's going fucking suplex crazy. Throws Lethal around everywhere. I thought that was super great. Lethal is selling his ass off really fast. Dalton looks like he's fired up and ready to go, and then Lethal rams his back into the rail, and then, you know, once you get back in, Lethal hits the Lethal injection pretty much instantly. And then from there, Lethal is all over the back and the neck, and I just thought that that was a great way to open it up. Unfortunately, you know, then it not to say that it's bad, but then it slows down, and then it really feels like we don't get a second act before we just go into the finish. And I feel like that was the only issue, is that it felt like you had the start, really good start to the match, really good heat, and then kind of never really got into the final bit. There's kind of a comeback from Castle, but I think maybe we should have got a little bit more of a hope, and then felt like it just felt like that because kind of overlooked or skimped on. Felt like the second half of the match was really skimped on, and just kind of didn't really get a lot more to really sink my teeth into, I guess you say, on the second kind of comeback from Castle, which again could be from being injured. But I thought that then the selling from Castle was great, and the opening from Castle was great, but it felt like he didn't have much in the tank left for the comeback. I thought Lethal's grinding kind of control working over the back was fantastic. So yeah, I gave the match 3.25. Because like I said, I felt like I just didn't get super invested in the comeback from Castle. And then it felt like after the match, Castle is then really selling his ass off for the post-match stuff. And, I didn't see that at all. And maybe that's, you know, the kind of that thing we were talking about earlier, just like completely dropping the selling for his offense, for his section of the match, kind of hurt that for me. Didn't have the kind of the investment at that point.
I enjoyed it too. I gave it 3.5. I enjoyed how they went to the big stone bombs early on. Because it was totally different than what I was expecting. I thought they brought it. I thought they worked a different match. Normally, Lethal is a guy who you see start working a lot of holds, and we didn't get that. We got a lot of big moments. I enjoyed it. I enjoyed what they did. They laid out a really dynamic match that was, you know, kind of really story well driven, where it's based on someone who you didn't even know to start the season off, and you then do a story with them, and blah, 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 you guys become best friends, and now it's getting published, you know? So that's how I felt like the match worked. It was, like, really, like, a best of everything, and we didn't get bogged down with some of the stuff that Lethal can really suck a room out of, like, when he's working holds, and sometimes he shit cans limb work, and so we didn't get any of that, and we got him to focus on the back. I enjoyed that. I think because Dalton was hurt a little bit, they limited what they were doing, and I think they were in a smarter match because of that. Overall, I mean, I give it a thumbs up, thumbs in the middle, probably a thumbs in the middle. Nothing was bad on the show, but they were missing that great show. I mean, I'd probably say it was probably a little better than the NXT UK show from last week. Where would you place it?
Yeah, definitely. And that was kind of part of why I wanted to watch this. I had heard a little bit coming out that there was some good matches, but also I wanted to see what this new ROH is going to look like. And honestly, to me, coming out of it, it's promising. I think part of it does help. The Villain Enterprises group looked good, and so it's like that's a plus for new guys that they're using, obviously. More and more, Brody King and PCO look like they're in the right spot. Briscoes look like they can still go, so that's nice to see. Then you got, like, you know, Gresham, Cobb in a match interacting with each other. I think helped add some like a little bit to that. Bandido talked about Bandido having a good kind of showcase situation. So yeah, I thought that it was pretty good. I would definitely say I agree that I probably enjoyed it more than the takeover from UK. So we'll see how they continue to move forward for ROH. I'll actually be paying attention for the first time in a while now that the Elite is gone, and it looks like there might be something interesting coming out of the company.
Yeah, I agree. Totally agree. Man, anything you want to plug before you head out?
No, just same old from me. Follow me on Twitter at Lucha Undead. We may have a bumpy road next week for the episode. I'll be out of town on the weekend, but we'll still have something, I think, is the plan. But that's it from me.
All right. Well, follow me on Twitter at Titus O Wrestling. Again, find something you like to watch and watch it. Have a great weekend, guys. And remember, NXT TakeOver is tonight, and Royal Rumble Sunday. We'll be back probably early next week to do a recap of NXT TakeOver. Later, guys. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the police. Whoop, whoop. That's the sound of the beast. Stand clear. Done, man. Top. You can't stand where I stand. You can't walk. Get pops.